This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, it sort of feels like the middle of the school year. Probably not exactly, but a good time for a mid-year update. And we're talking to a few of the school district officials over the next several days. Superintendent Jared Cordner, Roseburg Public Schools, the first one. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So, if you were to kind of do a broad brushstroke review of the previous several months, how is the school year gone so far?
Well, to answer that question, I think you have to start with our kids always, look at our students. And I would just say this, you know, every time I've had an opportunity to be in our schools, I am excited to see the things that our kids are doing. Our kids are amazing. And if you haven't had a chance to meet some of our young men and young women in our community, you're really missing out. They're smart, they're thinkers, they're doers, they're compassionate. So kudos to the parents in our community who are raising great kids, and kudos to our staff, educators who are committed and caring and doing a great job with our kids. And also put in there, kudos to our board of directors who've been instrumental in shaping the vision of our schools for our kids. So our kids are doing really well. We're excited what our students are accomplishing and our staff. And then I think generally speaking, I'm excited about the progress we're making as a school district. We're continuing to prioritize some important health and safety items for our kids while strengthening some of our instructional practices that are helping us improve outcomes in those foundational important items like math, reading, and writing, and always striving to give more opportunities to our kids to engage in rigorous coursework.
What do you feel like the biggest challenge has been so far this school year?
If you're asking me today in January, I'd probably go with most immediately that the cold and flu season has been a bit of a challenge. We've had lots of kids out. We've had staff out. Staff have done a really good job finding creative solutions to help with shortages. We haven't had to close schools. But this flu season has been a bit challenging for our families. That's probably been the biggest challenge here, if you ask me today.
You know, I've heard from parents that have got younger kids talking about sending their kids to school, and instead of 20 kids, there's 7 or 8 some days.
Right before the break, before Christmas, there we had a number of families. It was running through communities actually, and even school communities. We had lots of kids out. We had staff out as well. That's probably been the biggest challenge this year, and we're hoping that here in the future, as we move into the spring and into finishing up the winter here, that won't be the case.
Do you feel like this school year is more a return to normal?
Yeah, I think in many ways it is. We have, those traditional activities, we're back. We've got athletics and activities and band concerts and robotics and the kind of traditional things we weren't able to do, certainly in the pandemic. We have adopted this mantra a couple of years ago, which is let's get back to better instead of back to normal. But I think that the things we consider normal, those activities, and even what the school day looks like is much more of what we were used to in the past. We're, of course, looking for ways to improve and everything. So back to normal, yeah, I'd say back to better.
What about big projects that have been going on the school year?
Well, most notably might be on the facilities side of things. Our large facility projects really have focused on safety and security. As you're probably aware, last year was tragically a record-setting year for school shootings, fatalities, and injuries in schools, and we've unfortunately seen that trend, unfortunately, not decrease. And our school board has prioritized some of the most critical projects in safety and security. So you'll see some fencing around schools. We're designing and constructing entrances at each school, what we call vestibules, that require a check-in in order to get into the school. We have a new visitor management system. Additionally, we've moved at the high school. We've done some work to move kids out of and staff out of the old main and into some modulars. So there's been some, mostly on the facility side, some of the big projects happening this year.
Now, I haven't looked lately, but during the soccer season when I was out over in the field a lot, modulars were coming in. How many did you end up over there with basically west of the football field?
Yeah, it's, boy, you hate you always like to use those spots in your facilities where you've got nice grass there. But we did end up putting three modular units west of the RHS field, Finley Field. Those are going to, they're double wide units. There'll be six classrooms there, and those will accommodate the most of the remaining classrooms in the Old Main. And again, that the Old Main, it doesn't meet modern building codes or really educational standards. And so we took the other classrooms that were there, and over the summer, staff did a great job getting ready, our maintenance staff and school staff, and we've redistributed those classrooms out. We still have six classrooms remaining plus a weight room in there right now.
And is there a plan to get those out as well, or is space in terms of where to put those kids an issue?
Yeah, the remaining three modulars will host six of the classrooms that'll be in there, and that will take care of the majority of classrooms that are that were currently being used in the Old Main. We still do have the weight room in use there for both weight training and our student athletes that will use the weight room, and that's in, you know, what was essentially the auditorium in that Old Main years ago.
We'll talk more about some of the building ideas in a bit. But for RHS, when you look at the future, I mean, it was about 20 years ago, there was a big project, capital improvement levy. A lot of work was done there. But there are other places along with the Old Main that need some help, too.
There are. And that really could be said for, you know, probably buildings other than just RHS. But, you know, at the high school, we continue to want to make sure we have facilities that meet the needs of our community, our workforce, and our kids. And we've talked about that Old Main specifically of wanting to get that building rebuilt. It's about 100 years old, actually, and we're hoping to get a building that can meet the needs for the next 100 years in our community.
So where did the funding come from for the modulars, some of the other things you've been doing?
Yeah, so those dollars came through what's called ESSER funding, and that came as part of the stimulus money that came to schools over the last couple of years, right during the pandemic. And we were able to use a portion of that money was intended to be for kind of what they call, you know, student lost learning that happened in the pandemic. We were remote, as we remember. We've used a portion of that certainly for that, but there was money that was for capital type expenditures, not enough to rebuild a building or to build a new school, but we've used the ESSER funding for a lot of our safety projects, as well as the modular purchases we've done. In fact, we'll be purchasing two additional modulars, one at an elementary school and another one at a different elementary school.
So you mentioned RHS a lot, and then in some of these modulars, what about other projects aside from the fencing and other things? What do you have going on?
Yeah, on the capital improvement side, there's always the we set money aside every year to do major maintenance, but it's really fixing things that are breaking Again, we do have, you know, we've got boilers from the 40s, buildings from the 20s. We have one building that actually was built before World War I. And so just keeping those up, most of the projects are really more of the maintenance side of things, of keeping buildings that are a little older up to date.
So enrollment this year, I'm curious, coming out of the pandemic or whatever phase we want to call this part of life right now, is enrollment up, down?
Yeah, we're up. We were down, you know, at one point about 500 students during the pandemic, and we're back to those pre-pandemic levels. In fact, our enrollment's up from even last year, and we've been open in person for some time. Enrollment's up. We've got more kids coming, you know, enrolling, which is great to see. I think more kids there still are families interested in other options, which is great. But we've seen some of those kids return and are being successful with us in school, which is great.
And you've got the Roseburg Virtual School. We're going to talk about that in depth with the principal there next Monday. But what can you tell folks about that?
Yeah, so we do have, you know, that came out of an idea during the pandemic of what if we started our own virtual school. And I'm glad you can speak to Danny Dargene about that. There's some really great things happening at Roseburg Virtual. What I can say in a nutshell is it's housed at Rose School. in town. All of the employees are certified teachers that work for us. And we had a K-5 building, then that's expanded to K-8. And there are a number of families in our community that are choosing to stay with a virtual option. They feel comfortable with that. And the outcomes for academically have been really successful over there for those kids, which has been great. So we're excited to have that option in our community.
And that was seems like one of the things coming out of the last few years that some people were really ready to jump back into more a traditional school model. But for some kids, though not the majority, for some kids, virtual seemed to work better.
Yeah, I think for these, for the families that are there, they advocate that it's worked quite well. One thing that might be kind of unique to that school is we still do prioritize meeting in person. So we have 1 or 2 days a week the kids can come into school, meet the teachers, be with their classmates as well. And so that social interaction that sometimes can be hard to find in a virtual setting alone is also been remedied by design with Roseburg Virtual, which is good.
Now, what about teachers and other staff? Are you still running into shortage issues?
We're not fully staffed. We have most of our licensed positions are full. But we do have openings with a lot of our support positions, probably 35 openings, and those might be from most of those are what we call classified positions, support-type positions. But then we also have a number of positions in special education that we've not been able to fill. And it's caused us, like many employers, to rethink about, you know, what our pay scale looks like and how to attract employees. It seems to me that gone are the days in which you put out an application and you have 25 applicants. We haven't seen that really post-pandemic. And so we're having to rethink about, you know, when you have that many open positions, it tells a story of why, really about where your, you know, where the incentive to come and work for your organization is. So we're continuing to work on how to improve pay and incentives to come work for us.
And normally those positions are people that already live here in the community versus a teacher position where somebody might opt to come here from somewhere else at a you know, at a teacher pay level. So there's more incentive to go to where you want to be. But for some of these other positions, you're probably not likely to move here to be an assistant.
Yeah, and I think you know, we have a number of positions that I think start at, you know, $13.71 an hour. And if you just take a look around our county and around town, the need for employees, supply and demand, we can see that, right? The need for people is increased wages. And, you know, I think working with kids is super important. We know education is vital in our community, and you know, you've got places, food establishments that are paying much more than that an hour, and we need to be more competitive in that market.
Now, are you seeing with particularly recently out of college teachers that there's a reluctance to relocate to Roseburg?
We're always in the mode of recruiting, and I think as a community we're starting to. I think there's a narrative we need to tell about why this is such a great place to be. And I love this community. I'm so grateful to be here. And I think we're all realizing as employers here of what we need to do to make sure this community is attractive and how to hire talent. We're not unique in that. We always are looking for talent, whether you're from Roseburg or whether you're from another place. And so I think, you know, how to do that obviously involves having a place where people feel like there's a sense of community, a sense of family, that there's a sense of opportunity. And schools play a pretty big mix in that, not just when we recruit, but I think anybody recruiting talent is going to want to have a school system that's effective and up to date.
After the pandemic, we've got a lot of workforce shortages. I heard this morning that there's going to be a shortage of accountants in coming years. Are you seeing still nationally some issues just overall with people wanting to be teachers?
Oh, for sure. This is data we track pretty consistently both here in this state and across the country. I do think we're seeing a decrease in, and if you take a look at teacher education programs at the university level, there's been a decrease. So we need to think about how to make sure we incentivize and also promote the value of being an educator. I've said before, this is such a great profession. I think in life we have to do things that really fill our soul, that give us purpose. And I've always felt like education has really filled that void for me. Working with the youth has always been a really an opportunity I think is amazing. But yeah, I do think we are seeing fewer and fewer people go into education. So it does make, you know, the hiring of teachers, we're seeing that across the country. There are fewer people that are traditionally that have chosen that path. And it might just be because, our starting wage with a master's degree is significantly less than maybe the starting degree of the master's starting wage and master's degree may be another profession.
Talk about what the school board has been working on this school year.
You know, the school board's done a great job in a lot of things. I really am grateful. These community members really deserve a huge amount of our adoration for the things they do. They are volunteers and they are members of our community. And this is actually, January is actually School Board Appreciation Month. So I want to say thank you to the school board members in our here in Roseburg and across the county. They have really dialed in a vision for our schools and for our students to make sure our kids are having successful futures. They've worked really tirelessly on the adoption of updating our policies and also creating that strategic vision for our future. So their role of governance has been really strong. I'm grateful for them.
Now, when you talk about the school board and you've had shifts, there's always somebody coming and going, but you've had a number of people that have been on the board, whether they still are now or not, that served for a very long time.
Yeah, indeed. We've had a lot of stability in our community. We should be grateful for that. I want to say we have a couple board members that are over 25 years on the board, and that's a significant amount of service. We have some newer board members, and we have elections coming up in May with three board positions, and the public service in a democracy is always evolving and it's always changing, and I'm grateful for the board we have and thankful for the service that they provide in our community.
I've seen a lot in recent months about kind of the mental health fallout from the pandemic. Are you seeing that in behavioral issues with kids?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been really this year spending a significant amount of time really taking a look, auditing, if you will, the supports that we have in place to help students and families. And I think what I've seen this year is that it's not always the number of mental health issues we see, but really the depth and complexity of mental health issues that are happening with certain kids. And you know, it is something that I think as a community we have to figure out how to help support when these aren't kids having a rough day. When you really think about mental health issues, these are kids that really severely struggle with things like depression, anxiety, maybe suicidal ideation. So we are seeing that still be prevalent in the community, and prevalent to the not always the number of students, although that can be surprising, but really the depth of complexity with the mental health issues is a challenge.
Do you feel like for Roseburg and maybe for education in general, that mental health and folks that are psychologists or counselors or whatever is going to become a bigger thing, at least for the next few years?
Well, I do know this. I'm not a medical professional, but I do know that our need to partner with mental health professionals is, and we're doing that, which is great. But that will continue to need to be the case. A lot of school districts, I think, try to do this on their own. And to some extent, I think we've tried to do this a little bit on our own in the past. I think well-intentioned, how can we as school educators that mostly focus on teaching and learning and content standards, how do we address mental health issues? And I think we've learned that we need to partner with professionals that do this for a living. I'm not a mental health counselor. I'm not a mental health therapist. I'm not a behavioral health therapist. So we have some really, we've forged some really strong partnerships here across the community in many aspects. In terms of mental health partnerships, working closely with ADAPT, Integrated Health, they've expanded services for our students and families this year. Most of our schools have on-site mental health counselors from ADAPT, and services are available to students and families by appointment through them. And that's, I think, the way forward will really be in the partnership piece. So educators can do the work of education. It's hard for us to do the work of mental and behavioral health and education. So we need to be smart about partnerships with others who do that.
And you feel like that's much like sort of the approach that law enforcement is taking locally, working with ADAPT, for instance?
Yeah, we've seen something very similar, and I'm grateful for those folks. We meet occasionally with our law enforcement partners, and I think they've had that same kind of opinion and belief, which is, you know, it's you might in the issue of a person struggling with mental health issues, you might need someone who has the background to do that. Might not always be a deputy and someone that's in that crisis, and it might not always be a teacher who can help in the both the immediate and the wraparound help that maybe a family needs. And so we're grateful for those partnerships, and we foresee on that side of things partnering with professionals to help kids.
What do you feel like the biggest or greatest accomplishment has been the school year so far?
Well, it's a hard one. I mean, we have kids doing great things, and that's always great. We have staff that really is going above and beyond. But I would say if we had to take a look at one thing, I think the safety and security projects we've invested in have really been, I'm proud of the work that's happened there. I think our families have adjusted to those. But I'm better able to sleep at night knowing that some of that work's being done. And I think that is an accomplishment this year. We've had some questions about, you know, with say fencing, does that mean we can't access playgrounds? Well, our intention is always to keep those open. But there's been some questions about what will this look like for the community use. And our intention is to be able to have that be there. But other than that, I think people understand the need for that. And it has been helpful in a couple, and at least what I know, a few incidents, having that extra protection there for kids has been good.
Future bond efforts, you had a couple of defeats. Any thoughts for the future?
Yeah, we did. We had, you know, we have been unsuccessful in the last two bond campaigns. I know this doesn't mean the community is not supportive of our kids and our schools. I know that. I've talked to hundreds of people in the community. You know, we ran into a pandemic in 2020, and we ran into really what was a pretty historic growth and inflation, and you know, the economic pressures were pretty significant in May. We've continued to listen. We've continued to ask questions. We've heard the community's call for a smaller bond. And so we will move forward with a smaller bond package in May that's going to focus mostly on health and safety, renovation, and repair.
And do you know when more information about that will come out?
Yeah, the board has given the directive that we're going to move forward with that in May of 23, and we're working through what the exact number is going to be there. You know, school bonds are really the only way that school districts in Oregon can raise funding necessary to take care of those large-scale renovations or building, for that matter. So we'll be working. We're not working with a bond consultant, but we're working with bond council on this and the board on this. And we'll have more information out soon. But we do intend to go for a small bond package in May of 23.
It's 12:58.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.